Economic Alliance presents the Gulf Coast Growth Show, your show for the coast with the most growth, with your host, Jason Lee and Clint Aiken.
All right, and welcome to the Gulf Coast Growth Show. I'm Jason Lee, and this is my co-host, Clint Aiken.
And this is your show for the coast with the most growth.
Fantastic. And we are here with Glenn Johnson. First of all, welcome to the show, Glenn.
Thank you.
And before we dive in a little bit into his background, I really want to highlight today's show. We're really going to focus a lot on workforce development. I know it's like a topic we talk about a lot, but I think part of the reason is because I know from a personal perspective, having spent time with several industry leaders this week, construction company owners, industrial construction company owners, the singular one thing that they're most concerned and that's holding them back is they don't have enough people to get the work done. And thank God we have the jobs, but we got to get after it. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what workforce development means, what it means to Glenn, some of the work that you've done, share some of those things, what we believe or what Glenn believes is at the root cause of that, and then really wrap up the show talking about some of the actions and things that are being put into place to really help solve the problem. So again, with that, Glenn, I want to turn it over to you. You can share a little bit about, you know, yourself and also BASF and the organization that you're with.
All right. Well, thank you guys for inviting me to come and speak. This is a topic that is truly close to my heart and passion for what I do, because not only is it important for the economic stability of our region and the nation itself, but the output of this work affects positively so many people. It's hard to do this work and not be passionate about it. I myself started in manufacturing. I cut my teeth in manufacturing. I remember 23 years ago, I was a proud young man living in a trailer park in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and got my first manufacturing job. And through years of being developed within manufacturing and then tuition reimbursement, manufacturing paid for my education, it's brought me to where I am today. And I'm really thankful to the industry for doing not just that for me, but for so many other people. It is truly an industry that brings people up. Mm-hmm. And that's what really workforce development is intended to be and intended to do. BASF follows this same passion. I mean, we say all the time, our motto is, you know, we create chemistry for a sustainable future. Mm. And I've never worked for a company that so much walked that talk. The culture is that way. The people are that way. And it's amazing to work for a company that does that. I mean, through science and innovation, we really translate this to our customers, and we help our customers to affect the current needs and the future of other industries, personal care, agriculture, health and nutrition. Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes on and on, but we truly are focused on making sure that economic success is combined with environmental protection and social responsibility.
I think that's really important. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt, but yeah. You know, a lot of people don't realize, and I always try and point it out when we talk about the environmental impact, they don't realize how proactive the plants are and making sure that's taken care of as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate
absolutely
y'all doing that.
I mean, for the last 3 years, I think 2016, it was $4.5 million. 2018, it was $5 million. In 17 and 18, both were $5 million each that we put towards nonprofit organizations within the communities that we live and work with, because we want to continue to help build the communities where we are. We've 470,000 school children have been engaged within BASF programs like Kids Lab and Science Academy, Teens Lab, and these are all economic or workforce development type programs that help build skills, that help create interest and creativity for school kids that we want to help within our community.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So,
appreciate that.
Glenn, for the audience, I mean, you just really quickly kind of captured a bunch of dynamic moving pieces that's taking place through BASF. Mm-hmm. But one thing I think for those that don't know who BASF is, perhaps you could just take a minute to really kind of tee in on that. So I heard a lot of dynamics of what it does, but there's a lot of moving parts there.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah. So ultimately, what is the organization? What is the purpose behind the organization?
We We are one of the largest chemical companies in the world. One of our old mottos used to be, and it still stands true, is that we don't make a lot of the products you buy. We make a lot of the products you buy better. Because of what goes into it. I mean, it's hard to even look around a room anywhere you are without seeing the effects of our industry, the chemical industry, because from the clothes you wear to the paint that's on your car to everything that you can imagine, it's affected by that. In a positive way.
Fantastic. Well, so BASF, it makes sense to me now. Yeah. So, yeah, I've always been familiar with BAMF, but that's a completely different ball of wax.
We're not going there.
That's
a different show.
So, Glenn, I know we talked a little bit about that you kind of highlighted a lot of the great things that are happening at BASF, workforce development. That's kind of your role over there. So when they bring you in and you go outside of BASF, why would BASF have somebody specifically responsible for what it is that you do?
Well, it comes down to a problem that all of us, hopefully all of us in our industry and in other industries are worried about. And it's whether or not there's going to be enough people to fill the jobs that we have coming. Not only that we have today, but what we have coming. And that's what workforce development is more than anything. It is not a reactive approach. It is a proactive approach. If you try to fill the jobs today, if you say, okay, today I have a problem filling this many jobs, well, you're already kind of late, because most of these jobs take some kind of skill training. So you can't just hire someone if they're not there, if you don't have a talent pool in the region that already has the skills. Workforce development goes as far back as creating career and technical education awareness in middle school, so that they know about the types of industries that are there and they can make informed decisions about what they want their career to be. And then it also goes as far as working with the educational institutions to align curriculum so that when students graduate or they get the credential or their certificate, that they have the knowledge, skills, and abilities that are needed at hire. And so it really reaches far back into that. And the reason why it's important is because of the problems that we see coming.
So let's hit on the definition of workforce development, because it's a term that's been bantered around a lot, and some people know what it is or know of it, but there's not really. I'd like to know what your definition of workforce development is.
Well, the technical definition of workforce development is an economic. The easiest way to say it is it's economic development only focused on people instead of business. So that is the simplest way of saying it. Whenever you are putting together an economic development program, as we would here in the Economic Alliance, you bring industry together and you talk about maybe expansions and lots of roads and I don't know whatever else that you would do in that area. But with workforce development, it's about people. It's about knowing how many people are in the area. What are the diversity gaps that are in that area for underrepresented groups so that we can be sure that we can tackle those things as well. It's simply about people.
Good stuff.
So knowing that it's about people and knowing that really we can't, I mean, none of this stuff works without people, right? Mm-hmm. It's just kind of an ongoing deal. I know if everybody's talking about why it's such a big, hot topic, right, being workforce development. I'd love to get your opinion. I know you've testified in front of Congress. I know you've spoken on multiple panels. I mean, your name's headlined several things. So you've really sought an outlying understanding of the root cause. And so perhaps you can kind of share with what you believe, right, what your opinion is at the center of this thing. What do you think's hurting?
Well, it's two things that are creating what I refer to as a perfect storm. On the one hand, people have probably heard over and over about the baby boomers retiring. But the way I like to say it that I think drives it home a little bit better is that 11,000 baby boomers turn 70 every 24 hours. Beginning in 2016, that started happening. Now, why do we say 70? Because what we found is through a number of economic downturns in the last 10 years or so, baby boomers that were going to retire in the, say, 65 age range weren't able to because 401ks, those types of things, weren't where they thought they'd be. But by the time they came back, they realized, well, I don't have to retire, and they're staying longer. So we're looking at 70 now, because as people turn 70, we're starting to see that they're kind of rethinking that decision. So the baby boomers leaving, whether it's now or delayed, it's a clock ticking. Right. It's going to happen sooner or later. And that is being the perfect storm. The other side of that, that is being exacerbated by the fact that we have a record never before seen number of capital investments in manufacturing across the United States. The American Chemistry Council says that right now they're projected to have over $70 billion in capital investments in manufacturing by, I think it's 2025. So it's never, wow. We've never seen this much capital expansion. In other words, needing more employees than we've ever needed before. At the same time, losing people as fast as we are because of baby boomers and other things.
Wow.
And that is creating what oftentimes is referred to as the skills gap. Deloitte, the Manufacturing Institute, and the National Association of Manufacturers does this regular study of, and really comes out with some primary metrics, and one of them is the skills gap. And the last one that I saw was it was 2 million on the previous one, and I think it's 2.4 million now.
Wow.
Somewhere around that many people, that many jobs will go unfilled because we don't have enough people to fill the jobs that we are projecting to have open. And this is really, but it's not the root cause, though. Oftentimes we talk about in workforce development the skills gap, and it absolutely is important, but it is a symptom of the true problem. The true problem is an interest gap.
Mm.
People aren't as interested in manufacturing jobs because they're not completely informed about it. We tell kids all the time, whenever we talk to them about careers at career fairs, dream big, you can do anything you want. And although I don't believe that is incorrect, I believe it is sorely incomplete. Because if 2,000 kids dream to have a job that has two openings, then 998 of them are going to be unemployed, even if they're all straight-A students.
Yeah.
So we have to talk to them not only about what are the careers that are out there, but what is the job availability of these careers.
There's actually a song I like, and he talks about how, you know, growing up he was told he could be anything he wants to be. Mm-hmm. But no one told him how to be what he wanted to be.
Yeah.
It's like, I wish someone would have told me to be what I want to be, right?
Right.
Well, what are your thoughts? This is a real big topic with me. And I do a little bit of work with some kids who I try to mentor in some of the school districts. And one of the things that I observe is a belief system of what exists out there.
Mm-hmm.
And in today's environment, what I see a lot of is really you know, for lack of a better term, you know, I can make it big from my YouTube videos and mm-hmm. Instagram pages and everything else under the sun that says I don't have to actually put on a hard hat and some work boots. And
right.
You know, I was at the gas station this morning, right, driving up to another thing, grabbed my Bucky's coffee, right? And there weren't any kids in there, you know, that mm-hmm. were big-time Instagrammers. There was a bunch of dudes up at 5:45 in the morning, beat up boots, you know, sitting there ready and filling up their coffees and getting ready to get on the truck. And I thought, that does not look nearly as cool, right?
Yeah.
As the dude who is sitting there saying, you know, I'm making it big and posting a bunch of pictures all day, who really we have no idea what he's doing. But I think we've kind of got a skewed vision of what's yes. taking place out there. How do you combat something like that?
Well, you have to give them the facts.
Okay.
And that is what really has resulted in the skills gap that we have, is that we are not giving them all of the facts. We're not telling them about the jobs that are out there, and that these perceptions that we have about our industry are not true today. I mean, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says clearly that manufacturing, on average, pays $20,000 more per year than any other industry in the United States.
That's huge.
That is right from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The problem is that the perception of manufacturing jobs is not clear. It's not as professional. At least that's the perception, but it's incorrect. Because you turn the channel and you see graduates coming out of different degree programs all the time, they can't find jobs. You mm-hmm. see it on the news, you hear people talk about it, seemingly accepted by society because people continue to drive into programs.
And most of those are white collar jobs that they're seeking.
Right, but
typically
the main part of the misinformation is that they haven't looked to see if that job is going to be available.
Right.
I'm not knocking any education program. I'm asking that as we tell kids the information, we give them all the information.
Absolutely.
You know, whenever we have these people that, that have degrees that can't find jobs because they didn't get the information. And you turn the channel to the next news station, and its manufacturer is saying, as we've been saying during this call or during this, this podcast, that we can't find enough. Mm. Jobs that are open and available that we cannot find enough, that pay more, have better benefits, and are in every way as professional of a job than those unemployed and misinformed Americans sought through a degree that they didn't look to see if was going to be available.
Hmm. I was at a conference once, and I like the way they referred to it, because a lot of people, I guess there's just this societal view that what has been called a blue-collar job is kind of below standard, right? And I like the way he put it. He said, you know, blue-collar jobs are now gold-collar jobs.
Ooh.
And I love that.
I love
because
that, yeah.
The gold-collar jobs are the ones that are paying better now than even the white-collar jobs. Mm-hmm. So there's stuff that used to be considered more blue-collar that I like the way he put that. You know, gold-collar, that really stuck with me.
Absolutely.
Because that's just, there's a lot more, like you were talking about, there's a lot more opportunity and they're making a lot more money. So it's pretty good stuff.
Nice.
I think we do need to take a quick break.
Yeah, this is a great time for a commercial. But before, you know, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the solution, right? And then we're going to learn a little bit about Glenn and his, you know, really the what makes him tick. So we're excited about that as well. So we'll take a commercial break and we'll be right back.
McCarthy Building Companies, from the Museum of Fine Arts to terminals on the Ship Channel, we understand the challenges and complexities you face when building here in the Gulf Coast. As the oldest privately held national construction company in the country, we have a clear focus on clients, community, and collaboration.
Welcome back. Thank you to our sponsors. We really appreciate them. We couldn't do this without them, so appreciate having them on. I think you had some more questions that you wanted to lead into.
Yeah, well, we talked a lot about workforce development. We talked about the root cause. I think now is a great time to transition into what's being done about it.
Right.
And so I know you guys are taking an aggressive approach. And one thing that I've seen probably from this region is the collaborative approach. I know I talked earlier about Dr. Horton. He'd been on our show. He was out talking about it to a whole group of 450-plus industrial guys this morning. Mm-hmm. And I think it's all hands on deck. And
right.
So, and all I see is some great, what, a Sanjack and a couple of the other organizations just right behind us. So why don't you tee us up and tell us what's going on in your end in regards to solving the problem?
Well, some of the pillars that I've already talked about are the part of what we call the systems approach to workforce development. It's about quantity of people, mm-hmm. quality of people, and then the synergy of working together in a collaborative way to do this as a group instead of individually. I really think that part of the failing of workforce development for the last 30 or 40 years is organizations and industry partners that are working in workforce development areas as their own strategy. They're doing it alone. They're worried about the pipeline of people, but they're worried about the pipeline that ends at their site. Hmm. Whenever we should be working together on the pipeline for all of us as a whole. I'll show you how that works. I call this the workforce development equation.
oh, he's getting really excited.
Uh-oh.
So let's say that XYZ site needs 5 electrical technicians over the next 2 years.
Okay.
They've done a projection and they know that's what they need. Well, to get 5 electrical technicians, you have to credential 5. But to credential 5, you have to enroll 10. Now, I'm using easy numbers here. So the success rates are different from place to place, but let's just use easy numbers. Because you have to enroll 10 because not everyone makes it through the program. But to enroll 10, you have to speak to 50 in career and technical education awareness events because you don't convince every single person to take that path.
Right.
Okay, so this math works except the day they graduate. Since I'm working individually, I didn't take into account that my industry partner across the street also needs electrical technicians, and they hire half of the ones that I've been intending to hire for the last 2 or 3 years.
Right.
So the better approach is that as a group in a local region, we all decide together with all of our industry partners that hire like jobs, how many electrical technicians do we need as a group? And maybe that's 50. Well, to hire 50, we have to credential 50. To credential 50, we have to enroll 100.
Right.
To enroll 100, we have to talk to 500. Okay? That tells us how much on the quantity side of the equation of career fairs that we need to go to and deliver the manufacturing value proposition and our own company's value proposition. It tells us specifically how many people we need to speak to if we know our own success and closing rates throughout this equation.
Right. Oh, wow.
And that way we create, instead of a pipeline that ends at our site, we create a unified pipeline for the industry, for our region that supplies us all. if we don't work this way, what winds up happening is we don't create enough, and we wind up stealing employees from each other, and we really inflate wages into a place that is not actually market demand, and there's lots of bad outcomes when we do not work together. One of the best explanations of this is called the Nash Equilibrium. Dr. John Nash had won a Nobel Prize in economics for his theory called the Nash Equilibrium. And in a sense, or in a nutshell, what it basically proves is that organizations are better off doing what's best for the group than they are than doing what's best for themselves.
There's a good movie with Russell Crowe called Beautiful Mind, where they get into the life of John Nash.
Yes.
So and if you want a little more information, I guess check out the movie.
Yeah, okay.
But it's a good movie.
That is one way of doing it. There's never been, is that I have ever witnessed, a work stream more tied to the Nash Equilibrium than workforce development.
It nice.
So clearly shows what we can do, the synergy that we can get by working together. It takes us less people, less of our time whenever we work together to deliver this message than it does if we try to do it individually.
Yeah, and I've heard this countless times from every guest that's been on our show, and it just is like a signature theme. I'm proud of it. You know, I'm proud to say we're part of it, but that this region itself, right? I don't think it's emulated across the country, right? When it comes to safety, when it comes to collaboratively working together to solve the problems, it seems that, you know, you can pit three competitors together, but when it comes to solving the root cause
right.
of the region, everybody's on board.
Well, they need to be.
Right.
I wouldn't say that we're quite. I don't know if we have critical mass yet, because if we did, there mm-hmm. would not be a skills gap issue. The fact that there is still a remaining skills gap issue tells me that there are not enough people that are convinced that we have a problem yet. Whenever that's not a result, then I'll say we've arrived.
And yeah, okay. Fair enough.
We've truly created a proactive approach instead of a reactive approach to workforce development.
Right.
Now, I'll give you another example of organizations working together. The North American Process Technology Alliance is an organization of 50 colleges, 20-something industry partners, and when I say industry part, I mean the corporate group, so it's hundreds of plants and sites.
Oh, wow.
Work together with the institutions, the technical colleges, on a degree program, the Associates of Applied Science degree in process technology. So what they do is they bring the college professors, the department chairs, along with the industry partners that are doing the training inside the plants, and they go over the curriculum that should be taught inside those schools to be sure that the learning objectives of that curriculum align with the knowledge, skills, and ability that is needed at hire. Within those, we did a statistical analysis. Dr. Robert Barst and I had our results published in the Journal for Technology Management and Applied Engineering.
Wow.
And this statistical analysis proved that within institutions like this that had a heavy industry input to the curriculum, we were able to prove that 1 year of education in those types of institutions was equal to 5 years of experience.
Wow.
Because what they were learning was exactly what industry wanted, because industry told them what they wanted. And they didn't just go over the syllabi. I mean, they walk through the schools to be sure that it's applied performance criteria, it's hands-on, it's truly as close to a replication of the job as it can be.
Wow.
So when it's done right, there are positive metrics that come out of it that you cannot get any other way.
And so we'll try and get that in the comment section on the post, so that people want to reference that article, they can reference that article.
Yeah, that's great content and great education. Now, you mentioned that was in another part of the country, is that correct? Or
it's North America.
North America wide. Okay, got it. So that's really exciting stuff, and I think we're seeing it play out here in our region with the opening of the petrochem portion of Sanjak that's coming. I don't know how many of our local plants, but it's been a ton have stepped in to really participate there and help build the, I guess, the backbone.
$64 million building.
Mm-hmm. I think that's in September, so that would be exciting.
Most of the majors around here have contributed millions of dollars to it. Yeah. They've got 40 labs. I actually got to do a little private tour this week.
Oh, wow.
It is phenomenal. I cannot wait to see.
Co-host gets all the private tours. Regular host, coffee mug.
Yeah, well.
Must be nice. One
you
of the things,
know people.
Yeah, you gotta know people. But This is a great time to plug the GCIF. So for those that are coming to the Gulf Coast Industry Forum, it's going to be right across the street from the event. And so they're going to actually have some, I think it kicks off with an opening, and then there's going to be some social atmosphere and social environment for people to connect and network at the event. So that's going to be a really, really opportune time for people to explore that new deal. So maybe I'll get my tour.
Yeah.
So this has been great. Now we always like to parlay and talk a little bit about the person themselves, the man that we, or woman that we have on the show. And, not going to dive too much in, but one thing that really has been standing out since I was sitting here listening to your passion, listening to your talk, right, was a guy who started in manufacturing, right, and I guess behind the gates, right?
Yeah.
Right? And when you – there's a million different paths that you could have taken from a career perspective, right? I mean, you could have been all the way up to the chain, leadership, doing different things. Somehow – I mean, your passion, it would be unmatched, right, in regards to what you're out pursuing to try to make workforce a better place. Where did that happen in that 22-year journey? What triggered this for you?
Well, I started in learning and development after I was an operator for a pretty good while. I started in packaging lines to continuous processes in the chemical operations. And at some point, I moved into learning and development. And it was such a light switch for me that as I saw people that would move from not having skill to having skill to seeing their lifestyle increase because of that skilling, it's just what I wanted to do. I was lifting people up the way I was lifted up. And I was never able to let go of that tail once it happened.
That's awesome. Yeah, I just that inspires me when I because you can always tell when people are positioned in a job and when people are positioned in their life's work, right? And so sitting across from you, I was like, okay, this guy's in his life's work. Yeah. He's found what what God intended for him to do, and it's pretty amazing to get to experience that. Clint, what kind of questions do you have?
So one of the questions we've got that we always like to ask too is what any personal achievements that you've had recently? Are there any good books that you've read recently? Just get to know you a little bit better. Are there any charitable organizations that you've been doing some work with lately? Anything you want to highlight?
Well, not really. I mean, I think they've been mentioned.
Okay. You haven't done enough.
I've testified before Congress 3 times in the last 24 months.
That's big.
The Senate Help Committee, the House Ways and Means Committee, and the House Education and Human Resources. And it's all been about workforce development. It's been about this topic. A lot of the content from today was also given there. And you know, there's more aspects of this that we don't even have time to go into, because really, you know, we've in the 30 minutes that we've been sitting here, 300 baby boomers have turned 70, and so
wow.
We've got a. I mean, that's it's one every 7.5 seconds. Every 7.5 seconds.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
So, I would say that would be the highlight.
That's a cool one.
Well, yeah, I was like I told you, I was doing my research on you before you came on the show. I had chatted with you, I know, electronically a couple times on the phone. I said, I can't wait to meet this guy. And then I looked at your resume and I was like, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. This is exciting. And personally, from a personal perspective, having grown up here in Deer Park, I was one of those kids that wanted to get out. Someone told me to dream big, and dreaming big didn't feel like it was supposed to be out here. Mm-hmm. And I left, and now all I want to do is be back serving the region and helping these kids understand that.
Right.
So the particular topic of today really weighs on my heart, because it's like how many, you know, I mean, I'd be 10 years away from retirement had I just fired up a gig down the street. So really cool to see what you're doing, the lives that you're impacting, and the legacy that it's going to leave. So with that, Clint, do you have any other questions? Glenn, anything that you want to share, wrap up with?
No, I'm good.
Cool.
Got our attitude of gratitude.
I'm always grateful, yeah. I'll go first, let you, what you're thankful for, and then if Glenn has anything that he wants to highlight. First and foremost, I'm thankful for, I was at the ABC this morning, and they were talking about safety. And there was a significant highlight and award and recognition of this organization that's nothing but contractors and industrial leaders. And the fact that they place so much emphasis on safety, mm-hmm. really hits home, because it doesn't have to be highlighted. They could have gone up there and talk about who's has the most projects and who has the most this and who has, but for some reason, right, we spent 30 minutes talking about safety. And so I'm really thankful and humble that there's just so much emphasis put on keeping people safe in this region, because everybody wants to talk about the dirty, bad objects that happen every once in a while, but they don't talk about the countless hours of emphasis on making sure that these guys get home every day. Yep. And I'm humble and thankful for that. So,
right. For me, you know, I'm kind of a book nerd, so I read a lot of books. And I'm just really grateful for the people that take time to write. It's hard to do. It's hard to carve out that space. Recently, you know, I kind of go back and reread books. So rereading Simon Sinek's Start With Why. Start With Why is a great book if you haven't read it, but it really kind of gets down to why Glenn's here, right? Sharing his passion, right? We can tell that you have that passion. That's part of your why. So just appreciate the authors that help us think of better ways to be better people.
Great. Fantastic. Glenn, anything you're grateful for?
I am grateful that I've been allowed to get into a position in life to be able to help as many people as I'm able to help. Some people I may never even meet face-to-face, but hopefully the programs that we are encouraging and that we are fostering to help create and work together with the industry partners improves the lives of many, many people, and I'm grateful Amen. To be able to be a part of that.
That's awesome. Exciting. Well, we appreciate you, and we appreciate our audience.
Absolutely.
Again, tune in. You can always send us notes via LinkedIn. Contact the Economic Alliance via their webpage. If you have any feedback, or if you ever want to reach out to Glenn, you can reach out to the Economic Alliance, and we can help you get in contact.
Absolutely.
So, thank you so much. You guys have a great day. We'll see you on the next show.
Thank you.